All right, folks, stay tuned. Here's Moiz Navon on the beach at Nachsholim Chof Dor in northern Israel.
All right, folks, I am enjoying Pesach vacation here. And you know that we always have to find something to do with the family on Pesach vacation. We got to get out to the land and see it. And for many years, I've wanted to take the Tchelet tour. Now, you've heard on my program on the Yishai Fleischer Show, we talk about Tchelet so often. It's one of the things I promote, right? Tchelet.com, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com. And for so many years, I've wanted to do the tour where you actually get in the water and look for the trunk, Murex trunculized snail. Am I going to find that snail? Am I going to find that little gland that you take off and that will become the Tchelet, what we call on this show, the true blue Jew? Is that really going to happen? Well, we finally did the tour, and I'm out here right now in Chof Dor, a very ancient place, a place that was the Phoenicians occupied at some point, 4,000 years ago. And I'm here with a group of people that all came with their children to snorkel, look for the snail, and also get an explanation from one of the world experts in this field, Rabbi Moiz Navon. Now, in his Moiz, right, it's like Moshe, but it's a different way of saying it. Maybe it's a French thing. Yep. But the bottom line is that Moiz, his day job is that he's a chip designer. Okay, many of the chips that you use in your life, he's designed. So he's a high-tech guy. But instead of that kind of high-tech, which Israel is also famous for, we're talking about a technology which is ancient, in many ways was secretive, kept by few families, kept on the knowledge that was not shared by many because it was highly revered and obsessed over and wanted. Moiz, thank you so much for taking so many people, 70 people today, to in the water, and also showing us the whole process of the dye today. It went very fast, not at a snail's pace at all, right? But I wanted to talk a little bit about this process. First thing, tell me a little bit about the star of the show. You were the star today. You were great. But there was another star, and that's the snail itself.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about the snail. Is it a rare snail? Is it a not rare snail? Is it something that can be found? Did we actually find the real thing today?
Okay, so it's a good question. I mean, definitely the Chilazon, people think that it's very rare that because there's a Gemara that talks about it coming up once in 70 years, so you think you're never going to find it. Really, as I mentioned to the group today, once in 70 years is really an expression that means once in a lifetime it washes up on the sand and you can collect them and make them for free. But otherwise, they live in the Mediterranean. They live all over the Mediterranean. They're in abundance, basically on all the shores. The northern coast of Israel was famous for them being fished out, as you mentioned, by the Phoenicians and later by Shevet Zvulun. They live everywhere in the Mediterranean, in Europe. They eat them. We actually get them from European fishermen because we're not allowed to take them off the coast of Israel, and that's how we get our dye. In terms of them, of our being sure if this is really the right thing, is this just another snail? We're very sure. We know that there's basically a family of snails. There's Murex trunculus, Murex brandaris, and Thais haemastoma. All these three snails were discovered in the 1800s by a French zoologist named Henri Lacaze d'Oudier, and this you can find in any encyclopedia or Wikipedia, whatever it is. Everybody knows that these are the snails that were being used to make blue and purple dye in ancient times. The reason that we're so sure about this is, as another thing that I mentioned, is that the color that comes from it is exactly the color that the Gemara mentions is the same color as the indigo ferritinctoria plant, the indigo plant. And those are really the two sources of ancient blue. There were no other blue dyes in the ancient world. So that's really why we believe that this is the right stuff.
Okay, so there's an element of this story which is about finding. It's a chemical story, it's a biological story, and then there's also a religious story in this whole thing, right? Sure. And there's also a, should I say, cultural kind of moment or redemptive moment. I want to kind of not overstate the case, but at the same time explain that the Tchelet has an element of, there's something about it which is also about the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Right. There's a relation to that. So let's just break it down a little bit. I wanted to tell you something. Yesterday I was in the Old City, and I saw a flyer. The flyer on the floor had a man who was obviously dressed as a Haredi, black-hatted man, and he was holding in his hand the Tchelet string, and I wanted to bring it to you today, but in the rush it was lost. And basically it was a seminar for the ultra-Orthodox in their branding to get people interested in Tchelet.
Correct.
So there's an element of this thing as though, here's a question. When something is lost, can it be brought back again in Judaism? Right? And is that part of the psychology of the issue behind this thing?
Absolutely. I mean, look, there's a difficulty in bringing things back that don't have a Masorah, that don't have some kind of father-to-son, mouth-to-ear kind of transmission. And that's been one of the things that's held this back in the more traditional circles, let's say. You know, like in the modern Orthodox world at YU and Dati Lumi, Hesder Yeshiva is even more accepting because they've looked into the science, they've looked in the archaeology. Like you said, all these different scientific things have shown us that we really have the right stuff. But the more traditional circles, like you mentioned, the Haredi world is looking more for things like Masorah, and we don't have a Masorah because this was completely lost to the Jewish people. It was lost to the world, really, for at least 1,300 years, according to Rav Herzog. So, yeah, there's now slowly becoming an acceptance that we can use evidence, and really Rav Tversky wrote about this a long time ago in a article in Journal of Halakha, and he said Masorah, if you look at it, is really one of the ways to be Koveya Halakha, to fix what we know halachically, and you can use things like Umdana, which means circumstantial evidence, which is what we have, and now the Haredim are beginning to realize that, and they're beginning to see the weight of the evidence, and so we've been hearing in New York and in Israel, there have been seminars where there are black hat rabbis and black hat communities which are really talking this up. And so, yeah, it's definitely, seems like there's some kind of critical mass. I mean, over the years, there have been black hats that wear the tzitzit in, but now it's becoming more accepted, let's say.
Here in Chof Dor, the beach at Dor, it's also known as Nachsholim, mm-hmm. there have been found vats with broken shells,
correct.
And also dye vats right. with a kind of purplish color around the rim, so you know that that's where it's been done. So explain that to me. Mm-hmm. This process that we're doing today was done at this very place even before the Jewish people were here, by the correct. Phoenicians, who yeah. you said yeah. were the people were known as the purple people?
Correct, correct. So, I mean, in Chof Dor, they found on Tel Dor, they found dye pits, basically these ancient vat kind of structures in the dirt, and along the sides of it, it had this snail, the Murex trunculus dye along it. In terms of the actual process, we do it a little bit differently, like you got to see, the group got to see today, is that we use a chemical that does reduction, that basically breaks down the dye in order to allow it to go in the wool. That's really the key element of this
dye. To bond process. With the wool.
Exactly. So this is that's sort of the key element of the process, is how do you get, you know, you can squeeze bugs, you can boil up onions, you can use coffee. They use all kinds of ways to try and stain garments. But to really make something go into the wool, you need some kind of chemical process, and that chemical process is reduction. We did it with a fancy chemical today. In the ancient times, basically, they simmered the meat for a week, and they caused this reduction, and that's basically the process that they did then is exactly the same process that we did now, just in a shorter amount of time.
That actually made me very happy when I learned that the rest of the snail was used, because what's kind of shocking, and my wife was shocked, I knew about this because I actually read the book, The Rarest Blue, which was written by your colleague, Dr. Baruch Sturman,
correct.
Which, by the way, which was an excellent book. I must say the book itself was an excellent book, and I actually very highly recommend it. But what was shocking to my wife, which I already knew, is that the gland that makes that dye is a very small part of that little snail.
Correct.
So then you chop off that little gland, and even that gland has two different liquids that have to mix together at the right time, not too late, and then it, you know, makes that dye stuff. But then you're like, oh my God, what are we cracking a whole, you know, killing a whole snail? And this is not just a circumcision of a snail. It doesn't keep going. This snail dies from this process, right? So tell me a little bit about like the past, how we used the full snail, and that didn't kind of go to waste, and also just more a second, folks. We'll get back to you in one sec. No, you can walk in. I just want to finish my interview here with one of the great experts in Tchelet. But tell me a little bit about how we used the full snail in the past and how we use the full snail today.
Okay, so basically, I mean, the way they used it in the past is that they didn't know that in the hypobranchial gland was exactly the dye. They knew that you get dye out of this stuff. They would take the whole snail, smash it up, crush it up, and basically get the dye stuff when they would boil all the meat together. Today, today we know that it's just this gland that we need. And so we go to the fishermen, we have them cut the gland out, and then they eat the meat. Basically, you know, these snails are eaten all over Europe. You know, I was in Europe and in Paris, and there was all kinds of baskets and seafood markets, and it says Murex, and you see it's exactly our snails. So basically, you can pay 165 shekels and wear them, or you can pay 165 shekels and eat them.
Mois, when you turn to these Croatian fishermen and French fishermen, and you were like, but we need this little gland. What was that like?
To be honest, I wasn't in Croatia. I did this, like you mentioned, Baruch and Joel Guber, and they're the ones who went there, so I can't honestly answer that question, because I don't know how they reacted. But I imagine that they were happy to get the business and also keep the meat.
Mois, so we're finishing off. There's a big group of people coming. Even I recognize some people here, former classmates of mine. They're all coming to do the next tour with you.
Right.
You do this every year. You come out. You stay out here. This is not your profession.
No.
This is a hobby, a love of yours, a passion of yours.
Correct.
You're something. You're part of it. And the organization is called the Association for the Promotion and Distribution of Tchelet. Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com. All right. And I'm really honored to be part of it. Thank you so much for a wonderful.